Today is February 11th, 2015, and this is episode number 293 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, Managing Editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, Chief Conductor's Third Assistant for the Orient Express.
All aboard!
Get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast. You can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment anything or question anything about the show, whatever, write us at acm@macobserver.com.
Wow, that was awesome. And just the way you pulled away from the mic and put your hand up to your mouth to yell to everyone still on the platform, all aboard.
Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm.
That's just the sign of a true professional.
I'm thoughtful that way. But you know what inspired today's title is the fact that we're continuing at least one conversation from TDO.
That's true. We did a setup on TDO today, because we just didn't have enough time to continue going for a conversation that we're going to have here.
Yeah, and TDO, of course, is the Mac Observer's Daily Observations, which is our daily podcast. It's kind of a shorter format, but Jeff hosts it. And as he said, we got into a conversation today about cars, but we really didn't have time to finish it. And our topic today, let's start with the Church of Apple Doom.
Okay. First thing I have to say is I absolutely love how you went into the Church of Apple Doom and talked about faith-based belief that Apple is doomed.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, it's so funny. So many Apple haters call we who like Apple products the Apple cult. And they talk about us drinking the Kool-Aid, a rather...
Do you think these people really get what they're saying when they say drinking the Kool-Aid? Do you think they really get that this is from a horribly tragic mass suicide homicide?
I was just thinking about that. No, I don't. I think that the real meaning behind that phrase has sort of been lost to the sort of cultural, the noise of the cultural backdrop.
I don't know. Sort of like when people say going postal.
Yeah, which is I don't much care for that phrase either. I mean, mind you, drinking the Kool-Aid has taken on its own meaning that is sort of transcended its Jonestown beginnings. It's mm-hmm. still pretty horrific. Jonestown is beyond horrific. It's actually to this day, it creeps me out that so many people would do that. But maybe we should just like stop this part of the conversation.
Yeah. Sorry about that. It really struck me as you said that. And I was like, yeah,
But that's what they say about us all the time. They talk about how Apple people drink the Kool-Aid and we're the Apple cult. And the interesting thing about that is that so many of the people who bandy about these kinds of terminology, really, I mean, they've got their own faith, this own belief in something that is completely unproven by any facts or evidence.
Yep.
And that's the belief that Apple is doomed.
And this comes as, or continues, even as Apple reported their highest quarterly profits ever, the highest quarterly profits of any company ever, and they have they're more valuable than anyone else.
Well, okay, all right.
On paper,
so this is where I've got to play devil's advocate here.
Okay, you play that role very well.
Thank you. Microsoft was never more successful than it was under Steve Ballmer. In terms of making money.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, we saw that Microsoft wasn't innovating. We saw that Microsoft was protecting its Windows and Office hegemonies.
Yes.
And we saw Microsoft doing things like killing its own internal products that might threaten Windows in particular. Courier is the one that springs to mind.
That still makes me sad because
it does.
Yeah. I was excited about Courier.
Courier was interesting. I don't know that I would have, you know, just like with the interface formerly known as Metro. Mm-hmm. From the beginning when Metro was released, I've given Microsoft kudos for not copying Apple, for not copying iOS. They came up with their own interface idea, and I give them mad props for that. And that happened under Steve Ballmer, to be fair to Steve Ballmer. That happened under him.
It either happened under him or in spite of him, depending on your perspective.
Happened under him. He kept a tight rein on what Microsoft was doing. That was part of the problem. But he allowed Metro to happen, and it was a different interface. But it's not an interface that I ever personally found attractive.
Sure. Yeah.
I admire the fact that Microsoft did it. I admire the fact that Microsoft went its own way, and came up with this new way of really displaying information.
I thought it was a great layout for a smartphone.
Yeah,
I don't think it scaled well though. But man, on a smartphone, I thought it was I mean, it's still the interface on Windows Phone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
so yeah, mm-hmm, I think it's still a really good interface.
Yeah, it's terrible for computers.
Yes, I agree but completely.
That's the whole Microsoft problem. You know, their whole that's actually tied into the dark side of Microsoft, which is this innate desire to protect Windows and to extend it, because that's where Microsoft makes most of its money, right? And you know, Apple, on the in contrast, and we talked about this a lot, but Apple is willing to ditch anything for the next thing. Doesn't matter how successful it is. They killed the most successful at that time, probably actually still the most popular. Not still. The Nano ended up beating it. But the iPod Mini was the most successful iPod to date, and they ditched that form factor and came out with the iPod Nano.
And I remember when they did that, all I could think was, Steve, are you crazy? What is wrong with you? And the answer is nothing was wrong with him. He's very shrewd, and he knew exactly what he was doing, I think, as did the people working with him.
You know, most companies capable of even eschewing the successful design for a different design, they would at least call it the same thing. Like, you know, Apple could have called the iPod Nano the iPod Mini. They could have just kept the same name and said, this is the new iPod Mini.
They could have, but I think it was a really smart move in retrospect to call it the iPod Nano.
Mm-hmm. And that's Apple's strength, ditching the old to make way for the new, not caring about cannibalizing yourself, not caring about destroying an existing product line, if it's going to be supplanted by your new product line. And Microsoft is exactly the opposite. So Microsoft, but all that time under Steve Ballmer, when Courier was being killed, and when nothing really interesting was coming out of Microsoft other than maybe Metro, Microsoft was making more money than it ever had before.
Right. And
so saying, you know, just because Apple had its best quarter ever does not necessarily mean that Apple is doing well in terms of being healthy in the long term.
Well, true. However, in this case, I think they are. And the big difference I see between Microsoft's golden age of profiteering is that they were not focused on innovation and bringing out new products so much as they were focused on building and then maintaining a vast market share. And, and those are very different things.
Yeah, maximizing revenues from Windows and Office. That's where all those profits came from.
Right. And they did that very, very well. But in the long run, they aren't going to be able or haven't been able to sustain that massive lead over everyone else financially because they weren't doing the key thing that Apple has been doing, which is innovating and finding new products and not being afraid to kill off something for the next big thing.
Right. So we know that Apple does that. And we know that here's the biggest thing that sticks in my craw. The biggest thing that really chaps my hide. I'm just like all over the place mentally.
I'm along for the ride. Another thing
that the Apple haters like to throw at us is the Apple faithful in a derogatory term, way. Right? They like to call us that. And again, the funny thing to me is that where faith is required is to doubt Apple at this point.
Yeah, that requires
faith. Liking Apple's product doesn't require any faith. Now, being an Apple fan in 1997, maybe that required a little bit of faith.
Sure. Yes, I will grant you that.
Maybe thinking that the iMac was going to be successful before it was, maybe that required a little bit of faith. But you know, it's been a long time since we needed to have faith that Apple knew what it was doing.
Yeah. Once we hit the point where PC makers were copying everything Apple was making, and I'm thinking specifically of the E machines, that was the horrible iMac knockoff.
Yeah, well, there were like
there were so many
there
of those.
There were five or six, I think, iMac knockoffs.
Right. And yes, and then PC makers started doing translucent products. And
yeah,
I mean, so here's this company that they're all making fun of and are saying is doomed. And at the same time, they were already copying Apple.
Yeah, they were. And today, the biggest thing that chaps my hide about these members of the Church of Apple's doom is that they say that Apple stopped innovating and that Apple can't innovate without Steve Jobs. And the reason why that chaps my hide so much is because Apple has released all these incredible innovations that from any other company would have been, oh my God, this company is the most innovative company on the planet.
Right. If anyone else had come out with it, people would have said, well, that's it. This is going to kill Apple.
Yeah. Yeah. So like let's name a few. We've got Apple Pay, a little thing called Apple Pay.
Yes.
We've got a little thing called Touch ID.
Yep.
We've got a little thing called HomeKit.
Yep.
A little thing called HealthKit.
HealthKit. I'm on the fence about that. I need to see how that plays out.
It might fail, but it's still an innovative.
Well, is it really?
It's still an innovative technology.
Really? I mean, is it?
Yeah, I think so. I think so because it's Apple for the first time is providing a system level interface for collecting health related data, protecting health related data, and making it possible for you to get that information to your hospital or doctor. Now, all those things aren't necessarily a full blown success yet, but no one else has done that. I would call that innovative.
All right. Yeah, you did add in a couple things that they're doing that Fitbit is not, and Fitbit is not a system level platform. But Apple has to beat Fitbit.
Does have to beat Fitbit. It is true.
But to be fair, that does not mean Apple has not innovated with HealthKit. So, all right, I will give you that.
And then, of course, there was that was the thing. What do you put it on? Put it on your wrist. What do you call that thing?
Bracelet.
No, that's not it. Apple Watch. Yeah, there's that little thing.
That little thing. Yep.
That little thing where Apple saw wearables, saw that wearables were not being accepted by the public. We're not selling. They're smartwatches, aplenty, but none of them were being used.
Right, because there was no compelling reason to use them.
Yeah, and Apple looked at wearables and has come up with a way to make wearables not only useful, but used.
And, well, we haven't actually seen that in action yet. Based on the company's track record, it seems very reasonable to assume that they will be successful with this.
I think so. And whether or not Apple Watch is a success, it is a sign of innovation.
I don't think many companies are getting just how serious Apple is about this market.
I don't think so either. And I don't think that most people casually observing Apple have any idea how much effort and work it took to make Apple Watch possible. Apple invented some of its own alloys for Apple Watch.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Who else is doing that? I'll tell you who else is doing that. The watch industry does that.
So Switzerland, watchmakers in Switzerland, they're doing that.
Yeah, Japan has done that too. Japan, Seiko has, they've got the, golly, I can't remember what it's called now. It's a repeater. It's got a little bell inside it. So a repeater means that there's a mechanical device inside that will ring a bell in this case, and do so more than once according to how you set it. It's very, very, repeaters are one of the more complex things that one can do with a watch these days.
Okay.
Seiko's known much more for its quartz watches than it is for its mechanical watches, but it's done some really, really interesting things nonetheless. And they invented a repeater that sounds like a particular bell from what I think is a Japanese Zen Buddhist ceremony.
No kidding.
And it sounds like that bell, but it's coming from inside the watch.
That's really cool.
And to do that, they had to invent an alloy. And they were so confident in this alloy, they didn't patent it so that no one else could actually, that someone would have to reverse engineer it to figure out how they did it rather than just reading the patent.
Fascinating.
Yeah, they specifically chose not to patent it to make it harder to copy. Right. Anyway, that's innovative. That's metallurgy. That's like wizardry, in my opinion. You know, when you get like making new alloys to do specific things, you got to be very serious about what it is you're wanting to accomplish to bother to do so. Turns out Apple is apparently serious about it. The stuff Apple is doing with bracelets, the straps that'll hold the Apple Watch. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone has any idea how much effort Apple has put into that and how much R&D, how much design R&D, how much, in some cases, materials R&D has been required to make all of those bracelets. I don't think anyone has, most people don't have any idea how hard Apple has worked on Apple Watch.
Now, the bracelets and wristbands, that's mm-hmm. something that that I have learned a lot about thanks to you.
I'm sorry about that.
Well, in this case, I appreciate it because it gave me a new understanding and a new appreciation for what goes into a wristband design for a watch. And that said, I think that a lot of people that don't have the information that I now have, that you shared with me, they're going to freak out when they see how much these bands cost, and they're not going to understand exactly why they're priced where they are.
Yeah, probably not. And yet, I think that Apple is actually going to be coming in under comparable straps.
I have a feeling you're right. But I also think that when people are having to pay more than $12 for a band for their watch, they're going to freak out.
Yeah, that could be the case. Some of them actually I think will be inexpensive, mind you. I think that Apple is absolutely trying to price the Apple Watch to cross as many income levels as possible.
I think you're right.
I mean, there's a floor. There's definitely a floor. At $350 to start, that's outside of the range of what most people are willing to spend for a watch.
That's true. Yes. And for the bands, I'm betting Apple may be able to get us down to $25.
For some of them, yeah.
Yeah, for
some of them are going to be $200 or $300.
I think you're right.
I think the Milanese Loop will be in that $200 range. That'll actually probably be the most expensive one, unless there's one with gold on it. I forget if there's one with gold.
Off the top of my head, I can't remember. But knowing what I know now about Milanese bands, $200, $300, that'll be a steal.
Yeah, that one's based on, I can't remember if we mentioned that on the show, but that one's based on Breitling's Ocean Classic, which is a strap that has recently come back into popularity, and they'll sell used on eBay for $500 to $750. They're new. I think they're $800. So I mean, you know, $200 for that strap is a steal.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is this: that's innovation. Apple came up with a new interface. You know, you look at most of the so-called interfaces we've seen on Android devices.
They're interfaces. They're just not good.
And they're not. I mean, you know, the you swipe to change apps. I mean, you know, and that of course is actually based on Apple's bringing swipes to life in the first place. Yeah, they're not really, I don't know, they're interfaces, but they're not very good. Apple came up with a new way of doing something, of interacting with a device that fits on your wrist. I mean, that is amazing. Apple is one of the only companies on the planet that can really do that.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, that swipe to switch apps, that's not even innovative for the other smartwatch devices. Apple started doing that with the iPod Nano. You know, the little square one that,
yeah, that's true.
That was like wristwatch size?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how you move.
Yeah, but that was still based on, that was after iOS was released. I mean, Apple itself was basing that on its own.
Right.
But I see your point. So the thing is that people who say that Apple can't innovate are ignoring all the innovations that Apple does. And to proclaim something in the face of factual evidence to the contrary requires an enormous amount of faith. An enormous amount of faith. And yet we've got it. We have last week there was Joe Wilcox, someone I consider a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Used to cover Apple when he was at CNET. Some point he became like the world's biggest Apple hater, and I don't know what's up with that. But at some point,
customer support at some point, maybe?
It could have been. He's been writing all kinds of Apple is doomed, and you know this Apple product is going to fail, or that Apple product is going to fail, and he wrote his own little Apple can't innovate piece, that was essentially just sort of me tooing a piece from the Harvard Business Review, where I think it was either a business or an economics professor. I think it was a business professor. You know, if I'd done my homework, I would have had that ready. But for the Harvard Business Review, this guy wrote a piece saying that Apple just made a lot of money, but that doesn't mean Apple's doing well, because Apple can't innovate, because the only reason people bought new iPhones was because of big screens, and Samsung brought big screens to markets, therefore Apple is a follower, therefore it's doomed.
Wow.
I mean, that was his thesis.
You should just sell your Apple stock right now.
So anyway, the Harvard Business Review guy said, I mean, it's just a ridiculous premise. I mean, there is no doubt that having large screens helped Apple sell some iPhones in the December quarter. There is no doubt. There was pent-up demand for a large screen device. There is no doubt that Samsung brought large screen devices to market. Of course, Samsung brought a lot of things to market hoping something would stick. That was the one thing that stuck.
Right.
Right. And that was the one thing that Android had to parade on for 2-3 years. And then Apple finally fixed that, finally brought out a large screen device with, by the way, this thing called Reachability that Apple came up with to make using a large screen device with one hand easier.
Right. I'm glad they did that.
because Apple doesn't innovate.
Right.
Right. And but Touch ID, Apple Pay, working with the Apple Watch.
How about Secure Enclave?
iOS 8, Secure Enclave, the performance in Apple's processors, the graphics performance in Apple's processors, the form factor of the iPhone 6. There are so many things that have gone into iPhone 6 being this incredible selling device. Where Apple sold 74.5 million iPhones during the December quarter, tying race to the bottom leader Samsung.
And Apple was not racing to the bottom.
And without racing to the bottom. Apple raising its ASPs, its average selling prices, right? And there was large screens were a factor, but they were merely one factor. And what's the Harvard Business Review piece was one of the best written, worst premise pieces I've read in a long time. And it requires faith. It requires faith in the idea that Apple can't innovate despite all of the evidence of innovation. It's the church of Apple doom.
Yeah.
Faith-based belief in Apple's impending demise.
And there are many people that will cling to that belief regardless of what evidence you throw at them. And you see the same thing in other areas too, like when you look at the environment, the global warming thing. There are some people that say yes, we have all this evidence. It says it is happening. Then you have these people that say no, none of that evidence matters. Therefore, there's not global warming.
Yeah. There's just no way mankind can do that. That to me requires faith. Believing the Earth is 5,000 years old or 6,000 years old.
6,000, Brian.
6,000 years old right now. Believing that requires faith. And, I'll be honest. I'll fight and die for people's right to have faith in whatever it is that they want to have faith in. I believe that religious freedom is important.
Yes, it is.
But when people start bringing that to bear in matters outside of religion, it's definitely something I'm going to be up in arms about. And this thing about Apple's doom, this thing about Apple not being able to innovate, it's just weird. The whole thing is weird. Apple is doing so much right now.
That's true. Yeah. When was the last time that Samsung designed? Well, that's not fair because they design chips all the time. All right, never mind. I have to rescind that argument.
Well, but Apple is right now the world's leader in mobile chips. Apple's doing stuff no one else can touch. Apple is like way ahead of all of its competition.
That's true. And Apple has designed their own processors. So there's definitely some innovation there.
Yeah.
So much so that we have people that now are thinking that Apple at some point is going to stop using Intel processors for the Macintosh and use their own custom design processors.
Yeah, well, I do wonder about that.
See? I mean, yeah. Apple's being innovative enough on that level that people can actually talk about, well, is this possible? Could they do it?
I worry about it. I worry about it because I have this resistance to change that says that desktop computing needs more power than mobile computing.
Well, if Apple were to design a chip that they used as their desktop processor, it would have more horsepower than the chips that we're using, say, in the iPhone and iPad right now.
Yeah, it is likely that if Apple were to bring a desktop chip to market, that it in fact would be worth doing so. It's likely. I do wonder though whether or not they can beat Intel at that game. Intel has a lot of expertise.
That's true. And Apple's last attempt at echoing with a very different processor ended up not working out too well. But I think there are other factors in that.
Oh, there were a lot of other factors, and it was a different company at that time.
Yeah, and yeah. So, still, I'm with you. I think that Intel is a better way for Apple to go, for at least for now, for their desktop and laptop computers. But the point is, Apple is innovative enough that people are seriously wondering if they could design their own laptop and desktop processors.
It's true. Here's what that's going to hinge on. If Intel can deliver the power performance and performance that Apple wants, Apple will stick with Intel. And we know that Apple went to Intel for lower power processors, and that Intel wasn't interested in working on that.
It's true. And now Intel's right. Like, well, crap, we should have done that.
Intel has more than likely learned its lesson. And I would imagine that Intel has been hellbent for leather on to come up with mobile processors and for laptops. I mean, to cut power consumption in a way that is exactly what Apple wants. I would imagine that the Intel has been working extremely hard on that for the last several years. And if that's the case, they can probably do better than what Apple can do. And I have no doubt that Apple will actually go with the best option. I actually think that if Intel or AMD or Samsung came up with a better smartphone processor, that Apple would go with it.
Maybe. Well, okay. If they could come up with something that was significantly better, then I could see Apple switching over.
Yeah, and part of significantly better is the fact that because Apple controls the processor now, it can do things with its processor that no one else can do because it controls the software too. And it controls every other component that goes into the device. It's making, you know, this that whole widget thing.
Right.
So, yeah, someone would have to really kick the snot out of Apple's ARM chips to get Apple to switch. But I think that if they did, that Apple would do so.
Yes.
I don't think Tim Cook in particular doesn't have a religion about stuff being invented here. That's not one of his foibles.
Yeah. So that said, I think the likelihood anyone's going to be able to come up with something that can beat what Apple's doing for Apple is not very likely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably the case.
And I'm totally fine sticking with Intel processors in our Macs. Although I do remember when Apple announced the switch to Intel, I got that dirty, creepy, sick to my stomach feeling.
You know why? It's because we bought into.
We totally bought into the RISC processor model, which should have been everything Apple promised.
We bought into it was Jozriak, wasn't it? They got up there and gave the presentation about how awesome RISC was.
And
do you remember that?
I do. And he was right.
WWDC, right?
Yeah, it was that awesome. It was all of that and a bag of chips. But
all the while in the behind the scenes, Apple was already developing OS X for Intel. While Steve Jozwiak, I'm sorry, is Greg Jozwiak, right?
Greg Jozwiak.
While Greg Jozwiak was on stage telling us how awesome RISC was and how much better than x86 RISC was, there were folks working on bringing OS X to Intel at that time.
That's true, but I think the reason Apple was working on Intel processor OS or Macs at the same time was not because Steve Jobs was thinking, well, this is better, but because he was shrewd enough to see the dysfunctional relationship imploding between Apple, Motorola, and IBM.
Yeah, it's true.
And so he wanted to be prepared in the event that happened. So when it does, then the spin they put on it is, we were doing this all along. This is part of the plan.
Yeah, you make a good point. You make a really good point. And Motorola, and Motorola is so bitter about Apple canning clones because Motorola bought into clones and lost a lot of money doing so.
They absolutely, everyone that bought into the clone market lost money in the end.
Power computing didn't because Apple bought them out.
Except for power computing. You're right. Except for power computing.
Actually, there was another company that Apple had to buy out too. It was either UMax. They had to buy the license out in order to make it go away. They had to buy the license back. I think it was UMax.
I forgot about UMax. Man, I loved the ads that that Power Computing ran.
Oh yeah,
let's kick That's Intel's ass. Awesome. Oh, they were awesome. Yeah. And they were the ads that Apple couldn't run because Apple was too uptight.
Yeah, at that time, absolutely. Yeah, you know, I've got most of the posters that Power Computing put out there. The Billy didn't have a fun birthday or something.
Yes.
I forget exactly what that one says. And then I've got that framed. I've got the back copy of the back page of Mac Attic.
I remember that with Sluggo and Nancy.
Nope.
Or it was just Sluggo.
One where it was O and then comic book, you know, the hashtag at bang, you know, the comic book version of profanity.
Oh, right.
And it says, we got caught speeding.
And it's because
they'd already paid for that ad, but now they couldn't advertise any of their products. And so they had the sort of, it was Mike Rosenfeld put that together. He was the marketing whiz over at Power Computing. Anyway, we're so off on a tangent. There's another area where I currently believe Apple is working on innovation.
Yes.
You're not playing along. Cars. We're talking about cars.
Wait, oh, sorry.
Play along, sir. Sorry. Play along.
I was so caught up in the train bell. I'm sorry. I had left our conversation. I had left the building. I was on that train with Hobo King Brian.
Excuse me. I am the chief conductor's third assistant.
Yes, but... but recently you were the king of the hobos.
I was. Oh, that's true. I was. I forgot about that. And it's possible that my noise gate will actually take that bell out.
Well, for the...
Not now. I'm going to turn that noise gate down if it does.
Yeah, I hope so, because I don't want anyone to miss out on what I just experienced. Cars. I never saw the movie.
I enjoyed the first one. Wasn't my favorite Pixar film.
There was another one?
Apple Cars.
All right. Yes. You spent a lot of time doing a lot of digging to get some proof to go along with the tip you were given that Apple is working on a car.
Yeah, I talked to some folks who told me that Apple is hiring the kind of people that you only hire if you're making cars.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like Apple is working on a car.
And they hired these people away from Tesla. And there are some people saying that, well, Tesla's been working on a lot of really innovative battery technology. That's what Apple really wants. And that's totally true and totally a valid argument, except they also need to keep in mind that you were told the type of people that Apple is hiring are the type you hire when you're making a car.
Yeah, there are all kinds of, you know, in Silicon Valley, there's constant headhunting between companies because everyone wants top talent, and there are so many companies with so much money right now they can pay for that top talent. You know, salaries are skyrocketing, which means that rent's skyrocketing, I might add, and housing prices are skyrocketing too. But an electrical engineer can work in a lot of different companies. They can work at Tesla and they can work at Apple. And at Tesla, they might be working on cars, or they might be, I'm sorry, on the drivetrain or the dash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and at Apple, they might be working on circuit boards for iPhones, right? I mean, it's the same skill set, to different jobs. So that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Human resources people. Turns out most companies need those folks.
Turns out.
Supply chain managers. If you're a great supply chain manager, you can work for Tesla and you can work for Apple. And, you know, lots of other people too. And the secretaries, mechanical engineers. Apple puts a lot of innovation in its hinges. The hinges in the MacBook line are amazing devices. Absolutely amazing. It's another kind of innovation that the faithful don't understand. And the folks who do that can also work at Tesla. So there's all kinds of back and forth headhunting, just as there is between Apple and Google, between Facebook and Microsoft, because Microsoft hires out of here too. Microsoft's got offices here. Samsung bloody well has offices here. You know, a lot of companies are in Silicon Valley. They got a lot of money. They're willing to pay folks. So there's poaching and headhunting going back and forth. But, to that end, Bloomberg ran this piece last week saying that there's a hiring war between Apple and Tesla and that Tesla was winning because some 150 people had left Apple to go to Tesla, whereas Apple had brought in maybe 50 people from Tesla to work at Apple.
Right. But those people, yeah. So if you're saying they're winning, at that point, you're just basing it on who hired more. But that doesn't necessarily equate to winning.
Yeah, and it's absolutely true. Plus, there are more people to leave Apple than there are people to leave Tesla.
That's a really good point.
But that's fine. I mean, it doesn't even matter. I don't care who's winning. There's probably always going to be a little bit of give and take here and there. At some point, Apple might have more folks, and at some point, Tesla might have more folks. The only thing that matters for this discussion is the nature of those people. And a lot of them are going to be those people that can work anywhere in Silicon Valley. But right. some of them...
They have very specialized skill sets.
Yeah.
And in this case, the skill sets they have are what you would need if you went to design a car.
Yes. And if we add to that, and I got another little piece of information. Apparently, a lot of very expensive ties, very expensive suits and ties. Well, it's Silicon Valley. Actually, probably very few suits or ties.
A lot of expensive Birkenstocks.
Fair enough. There's a lot of folks at the leadership level who kind of consider this to be a given that Apple's working on a car.
Right, and that's kind of
circumstantial. That's circumstantial at best.
But still.
But when you add to it the other information that I got, and then you add to it the Business Insider piece, someone claiming to be from Apple, and I do not know how much effort Business Insider put into vetting this person. You know, because believe it or not, I could write a letter to Business Insider claiming that I worked at Apple, and it's not going to be true.
That's very correct. And if someone wrote them an email from Apple, I certainly hope they didn't do it from their Apple email account.
Yeah, well, again, we don't know the particulars. Business Insider obviously isn't telling anyone, and they didn't actually explain how much they did to vet this person. They trusted it enough to run the story, but with Business Insider, that's frankly not necessarily saying all that much, right? But this person said that his group was working on something that would quote unquote give Tesla a run for its money.
Now, I suppose if you really wanted to stretch it, you could say, oh, well, that's battery technology, because Tesla is doing a lot of battery technology design and innovation.
Yeah, but it's different kinds of batteries.
Yeah.
I've heard that. I don't like that interpretation.
Neither
that
do I.
Doesn't make any sense.
And
because there are companies that are doing interesting things with batteries relating to mobile devices in Japan. Apple itself is doing a lot of stuff relating to that in China. You don't compare yourself to Tesla unless you're making batteries for cars.
Yeah, there you go. And I think a lot of people have forgotten that Tesla has that battery research program where everything that they're working on is going to be available to everyone.
Yeah, which is cool.
Yeah. So that being the case, Apple doesn't really need to hire away people just for battery design, because Apple, as I recall, is participating in Tesla's battery development program.
Really?
I think so. If they're not putting money into it, they are in favor of it. I know I've seen stuff somewhere about that.
Okay, fair enough. So when you put all of this together, I very much trust the people I was talking to. So, you know, you can take that as you wish. If you want to have a bag of salt on hand and take a few grains with me saying that, feel free. But I am at this point very confident that Apple is working on a car. Doesn't necessarily mean that Apple will release a car, but I do believe that Apple is working on a car.
And they're serious enough about it that they're hiring the people they need to make that car happen, should they bring it to market.
Yes. Yes.
Based on everything you've done, I believe you. I think Apple is working on a car. I don't know if they will ever actually ship it, but I think they're really working on a car. And that's kind of crazy. And isn't it interesting? I'm far more willing to believe Apple is designing a complete car than I am to believe that they would design a television.
But I am positive Apple was working on a television.
Oh, that wouldn't surprise me at all. I don't believe that it was ever something that was really going to come to market. But it would be crazy to think they weren't designing a television, at least at some point.
Yes. Yeah, I think I am convinced Apple I'm convinced Apple was working on television. I don't know that Apple's going to release it. I did think Apple would release it at one point, but I don't actually think that's the case now. I do, however, still think we're going to get a television announcement of some sort, something related to content.
I believe that. Yes. Yep. I think that will come, and it will be something that ties into Apple TV, the set-top box, as opposed to Apple Television, a high-definition television product.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So, cars, yeah. I think it's happening. You know, it's interesting. A lot of our readers, they disagreed with me. And actually, what they seem to be doing is disagreeing with the Business Insider story and not paying attention to the fact that I was saying that I've talked to people who are telling me the same thing. Hard to actually know. Nonetheless, I'm highly confident that Apple is working on this. I am semi-confident that Apple is going to release this, that this is a product that may well have reached that point past which Apple seldom says no.
Well, did you get a percentage of likelihood? I don't recall.
I did. I'd rather keep that to myself. Let's just call it high.
Okay. Fair enough.
For some reason, yeah, I didn't mention that for a reason.
Okay.
So, yeah, and it's going to be interesting. Interesting times at Apple. Interesting times at Apple.
Yes, indeed. Can you imagine driving around town in a car with an Apple logo on the hood that you didn't put there yourself? I mean, to be fair, I have an Apple logo on my Volvo.
Well, you know, Apple would have to do a lot of things right to make a dent in the car industry. And if they do make that dent, it's probably going to be way at the high end, just like Tesla started off way at the high end. Tesla started off at the high end, and they're working their way down.
That's very Apple.
It is, well, except for Apple, seldom works its way down.
Well, okay, look at the iPod product line.
Tesla's goal is to bring electric cars to the range of reach of as many people as possible. But they started at the high end because by starting at the high end, you can actually make enough profit from what you're selling to fund the R&D and development of new products.
That's true.
Elon Musk's entire thing. And he's kind of a stud.
Yeah, he kind of is. Yeah, I bet he's fun at a party.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe.
I don't know.
I'll see what I can find out.
All right. And if I ever end up at a party with Elon Musk, I'll let you know how it goes.
All right. Also, fair enough.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
So,
you know, we're at 51 minutes and a half. And that's without the music and the intro music.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably enough for a whole show. What do you think?
It's probably enough for a whole show.
All right. Well, I know how to make that work out perfect then.
All right.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Every time, you know, I was trying to be ready. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Broom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
All aboard.